Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation Weekly Show, where we equip students, athletes, their families, and supporters with vital tools and information that will impact their decisions on educational opportunities and careers. Tune in every Thursday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we host prominent guests from a variety of backgrounds, such as education, sports, medicine, and the corporate world. Remember, the Black College Sports and Education Foundation is your one-stop resource center. Now, here's your host, Executive Director, Ed J. Hayes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation show. Today, we are talking to a very special guest who perhaps has been in education and professional sports for a long time. And for those who are in the Charlotte area, you'll be very familiar with this gentleman. And we'd just like to be able to give you a little highlights about who he is. But first, you know, this show is really aimed at our student athletes and their families who are looking to learn everything they need to know to be fully equipped to make better choices and sometimes the best choices, whether they are equipped to go to a full-time college, whether they prefer a community college, or maybe just technical skills training. But our position is that we want to give you the most information coming from people who have experienced and who are into those fields that you might be willing to pursue. So I'd just like to give you just a few highlights about Gil McGregor, who is our guest today. Gil came out of Wake Forest University in the ACC down the Tobacco Roadway, and he preceded Tim Duncan as one of the first big men to come out of the ACC. He was a very distinguished player during his time, one of five who averaged a double-double in his career, points and rebounds, very prolific rebounder. He was drafted by the Cincinnati Royals and played a year with them before going into Europe, where he spent a couple of years in with France and Belgium. So he's very prolific in languages outside of English. So this is a great opportunity to chime in with someone like this who can share some insights for young folks who are aspiring to perhaps pursue a professional career in basketball or any other sport. But as an athletic advisor at Wake Forest after he finished his career, he was very involved with the young folks there and helping them to get a better vision of what is needed, perhaps, after your professional life, if you're fortunate enough to get one. But the thing is, this is where we start the conversation. So if I might, Gil, hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I hope you're doing well.
Doing good. I was just giving them some of your highlights and a very professional career that you've had, and this is really a great opportunity, and I'm delighted to have you as our guest today. So if you might just share a little bit of insight that you have concerning education and sports and how you see the climate today as far as the educational component being secondary to perhaps looking at a sports career.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that as you were talking, and as we're talking now, and you talk about shedding light, I guess fundamentally what's the most interesting aspect of it, some of the same issues that have confronted our students and slash student athletes today confronted them even 50 years ago. And I say 50 years ago, that's, you know, half of a century, but that's around the time I finished high school. And in 1965, the state of North Carolina, with the government, enhanced something called freedom of choice, which suggested that all students could attend any school that they wanted to, irrespective of race. And so I decided with some 19 other students to integrate what had formerly been all-white Hoke County High School in Rayford, North Carolina, my hometown, after attending all-black public schools and then high school, Upchurch High School in Rayford. And when I did that, of course, a lot of controversy, Ed, about the educational aspect of it, but it was also a lot of controversy about the athletic aspect of it, because, of course, you have athletics and you have academics at all black schools, too, and whether or not it was better to leave one and go to another, and certainly those kind of things impacted me as well as my family and probably had a lot to do with where I ended up going to college. Was very fortunate as an athlete at Hoke County High School and had a chance to be one of the first black players to play in the East-West High School All-Star Game, which will be played again in July here in North Carolina. And you talk about me being a rebounder. I still hold the rebound record for that high school All-Star Game, which was set back in 1967. I'll be the speaker for that dinner event this July, and I'm very proud of that and look forward to talking to some of the young men who will be there representing both the East and Western sides of the state of North Carolina. While at Wake Forest, I came back after my athletic career, as you stated, and was the academic advisor of athletics. And some of the same issues that I had, some of the athletes there had. And those issues are maybe not wanting to go to class, not preparing, and not looking forward to what might be your career path after sports, if you are fortunate enough to get to college to play sports. Most people don't even get to college to play as a walk-on or a scholarship athlete. But if you were to make it, there's a Coliseum that they tore down in Charlotte where the Hornets used to play that held 24,000 people. If that Coliseum would be filled with high school athletes, Ed, two of them out of 24,000 would make money playing sports. So the opportunities to play, the numbers aren't with you. But the opportunities to take advantage of by being involved with sports are plentiful. You meet a lot of people. You know what it is to lose and come back and win again. You know how it is to be in shape. You understand things like teamwork. You know how to understand the difference between criticism and coaching. You know a lot of things that sport can bring to you. And sport has been such a great equalizer in our community that to try to talk our young people away from sport is not a good thing. But to try to talk some of them out of learning the lessons along the way, as opposed to just looking at what might be a great lifestyle, is probably a message that we don't clearly enough get to our young people.
Absolutely, yes. Well, you know, that is something I think we all can relate to coming up through the system. And we developed a sense of, I guess, priorities were education first back in our time. And, you know, anything else that followed that was, of course, part of whatever you did to pursue being sports. We saw how the tide changed when college sports became a big money-making affair, I guess you might call it, and how it changed the landscape. And as far as the professional leagues are concerned, you know, they always have their ear to the phone because they're watching the trends, and, of course, they allowed, at one point, high school student athletes to consider jumping straight into the professional league. Now, I know we're talking about this as though that is a phenomenon, but it's not, because in other sports like baseball, it was never a requirement that you had to have a college degree or even attend college. So I see that, you know, there's such an inequity there in the way that we distribute this conversation about what sports you might want to pursue that might give you better opportunity to succeed in.
Well, you're right, Ed, and let's look at it this way. Individual sports have never gone under the same scrutiny. If you were a golfer, no one talked about whether you became a golfer at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21. Nobody complained about that. If you're a NASCAR driver, no one says, well, that guy shouldn't be driving NASCAR. He need to go to college. You never hear anybody say that. Even baseball has its own farm teams and minor league teams that don't require you to go to college. And I understand once you go to college, if you're going to try to play professional baseball, there become some types of things they want you to do, but you're not retired. You know, we hear all the time in baseball, a 18-year-old, 19-year-old pitching phenom that can throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball get signed to play in the big leagues. No one complains about that. But the sports of basketball and football are major money-making sports at colleges and universities. So people complain about those young people leaving. I have mixed feelings about it, but here's my example, Ed, that I always posture to people when they talk about it. They say that, you know, these guys, they ought to stay in school. They ought not to leave. And I ask the question, if one of, quote-unquote, these guys, and we'll talk about who these guys are in a minute, if one of these guys was offered $60,000 after his sophomore year to go to work for IBM, what would people tell him? They say, boy, you better take that job. That's a good job. Benefits and everything. You better go to get that job at IBM for $60,000 a year. Sure, and I right. say they are right. That would be a good job. But if that's a good job, why can't that same one of these guys take $6 million to go play for the Cleveland Cavaliers after their sophomore year? You can't tell me that's a bad thing for him to do. In fact, if you don't know the difference between $6 million and $60,000, it's quite possible you don't need to be in college.
Absolutely. And I agree, because this is where we always had this debate about what's in the best interest of the student athlete. I've always been an advocate of education, of course, because that was what was primed into us. You get an education, and that was your portal to other things, bigger and better. However, since money came into the situation, who's going to argue with a kid if he's offered $60 million or $12 million to go play pro football? It's a hard argument to make, because the thing that gets lost is that the value of that particular person is...
Well, let's talk about why that argument was made. Let's be very honest about why that argument was made, that that was not to the benefit of that young person. Those who were, like yourself, quite concerned about what would happen later on in life for that young person, all we heard were the stories of how they squandered the money, and they were broke after 2 or 3 years. They back in their neighborhood. Now they aren't in the pros, and now they're not in college, and now they're embarrassed because they've blown all this money. And there was a time when the money wasn't what it is now, that there were stories like that, and those were the only stories that were highlighted. There were stories of young men who did not waste their money, who helped their parents, who may have started a business with their family that we didn't talk about. The money is so big now, and that scenario that we've just laid out is one that people want to continue to lay out. But I suggest that the money's too big to lay that out now. A Wake Forest University guy, he didn't go to the pros right out of school. He's been in there a long time, and he's one of the best, and some consider maybe the best point guard to ever play the game. It's CP3, Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Chris Paul signed a 4-year contract, Ed, for $160 million. His grandchildren aren't going to be poor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, he got his degree because his mother and father, a wonderful black family, they made sure that he got his degree and that his education was important. He was a good student while at Wake Forest. Now, but if you're not a good student and you get millions of dollars of contract, as you get older and your priorities change, maybe you can come back to school and get your degree. That's not going to preclude you getting your degree because you leave early to go pursue millions of dollars in sport. Who complains about that? People who want to watch those kids play in college. You see, there's an element of steal of those kids, and the most of those kids that we hear the complaints about happen to be black college students. And the people who want them to stay around, Ed, are the ones who talk about how much the college experience costs their kids and what they have to pay for activity fees. And the activity fees would be to watch Tim Duncan and to watch Chris Paul play while they were at college. Let's call it what it is. Because when I was at Wake Forest as the academic advisor, the most prominent sport at Wake Forest during that time and for many years prior to and many years subsequent has been golf. But didn't nobody say nothing about Lennon Thompson? Ain't nobody said nothing about Jack Lewis? Nobody said anything about Arnold Palmer not having their degree when they left to play golf. Why? Because golf doesn't make money for the kids or for CBS, and there was no ESPN back in some of those guys' days, but there's no huge billion-dollar contract for student-athletes who play golf and baseball as opposed to playing basketball and football. That was one situation, and I think you have some contacts in the Florida area. Do you remember a football player down in Florida named Charlie Ward who was a Heisman Trophy winner?
Yes, sir.
Charlie Ward had his likeness, his image, put on the charge card of a local bank while he was in college. So when you got to get your, don't leave home without it, or what's in your wallet, whatever you want to say, whatever that charge card was, they could market Charlie Ward on a charge card that they couldn't even give him to use because it's against NCAA rules.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned a very ticklish point there, because the NCAA, having watched this whole thing evolve into this giant industry, and one time I wrote about this being one of the giant industries in the world behind oil,
yes,
silver, gas, gold, and drugs.
Yeah, okay.
College sports was evolved as one of the billion-dollar industries.
Billions
even back
of dollars.
Today. Billions of dollars being generated. Now, when I asked the question about the NCAA, did they drop the ball? Because it comes up from time to time that while they are reaping all the rewards of having these young men come in and play for a year, one and done, is there an argument for being compensated? And we've heard all kinds of scenarios. Yeah, they should be paid. But like you said, you know, you can't pay everybody because you're not going to pay the tennis players and the volleyball players.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you let me be on your podcast because I haven't had a chance to give my opinion about them being compensated.
Okay.
Would you like to hear it?
Yes, indeed.
This is my advice to the NCAA, and let me remind you, they ain't asking for it, okay? But this is my advice, what the NCAA could have done a long time ago. Well, first of all, as times change and as you need to look at indexing the cost of living, as all that changes, you can raise the value of scholarship that you give to student athletes. Let's start there. Let's raise the value of the scholarship. Boom. And I know the NCAA has made some changes. So first you raise the value of the scholarship, and then you give that athletic scholarship to whatever athlete deserves it. Now, you look at that athlete's background. If that athlete would have qualified for any other scholarships at that institution because of finances, whatever other hardships, add that on to the athletic scholarship. If the athlete's dad is a doctor and mama's a lawyer and he doesn't have no hardship, then all he gets is the athletic scholarship. Now, I'm concerned about paying them because I'd hate to be a 18-year-old student standing at the foul line in front of 18,000 people or more, and I miss a free throw and have someone yell at me, "We didn't pay you to miss free throws," and I'm in college. Because I think that that could cause for not a good college experience. Everybody wants to talk about the college experience and why you go to college and how you learn to interact with people. It's not just the party atmosphere, but certainly learning how to party is part of it. But I think if guys start getting paid, they would be definitely not looked upon as young men and or young women in school for what college is supposed to do, sharpen your skills, teach you networking, teach you how to look people in the eye, teach you how to prepare for a test, teach you how to pass a test. But when you start paying them, now they just become indentured servants. So if you're going to pay them, let them go pro.
Now, the other argument is people are talking about, well, this is what they are. You know, they're indentured slaves, even when they get paid in the pros. You know, you got some antagonists out here who are claiming that, well, they're just a high-priced slave. But
there was a book called The $40 Million Slave. I haven't seen many. I ain't seen a whole lot of $160 million slaves. I think that argument, what happens to the guy who works for 30 years for a company, never gets his due in terms of promotions, and then whenever he's let go because he's been there 30 years, gets a cheap pen and a banquet.
Mm-hmm.
Was he a slave for 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to work somewhere, and I think the monies that are generated now by the athletes, just like by some of our entertainers, they can take that money and play it forward. You know, we had a gentleman just recently who paid off the entire student loan for the graduating class at Morehouse College, who's taken money and taken and used it for what it should be to make things better. And I think with what we're seeing with LeBron James and what we know that has happened with Magic Johnson and what's going to happen with the likes of a Chris Paul and also a Steph Curry, I don't think guys who play a sport that they love as well as they play it, they've been blessed by our creator to give them some talent and skills. They turn that into dollars. I don't think they're slaves. Not at all.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you because it's a crazy definition of what we're talking about. Slaves didn't get paid at all. And in this case, these guys have earned the right to make a living at whatever they're doing.
What the market demands.
That's what the market calls for. I mean, you know, this whole thing started because they realized back in the day that the owners were reaping all of the money, and they were really some of the greatest in the game didn't come close to getting compensated for their value.
Not at all. You see, that whole thing about the owners, and nobody ever had stopped to ask a simple question. If a man pays you $40 million, how much is that man making?
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly not going, he ain't going to go broke paying you.
Well, one owner made a statement behind some players where they were squabbling, some of these championship teams, you know, guys with egos that were bigger than the team, and they were trying to lay claim to, hey, it's my team. But he made that statement about, well, you know, he may be, say he's rich, but, you know, I'm wealthy because I pay all those rich guys.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, there's something about our great, wonderful country where ownership becomes more of a value than maybe we've always placed on it. Again, that's been something that a lot of people pointed out and pointed to as something that suggests you are a man and you do what you've done supposedly the right way. And entrepreneurship has not been any taught nor practiced in our community. In our community some years ago, having a job was what everybody thought everyone should aspire to. So people have played it safe. And our fathers and grandfathers and forefathers, after they come through the turmoil that was African diaspora and slavery, try to play it safe and teach their young sons and grandsons to play it safe. And that's been part of our legacy. But now we're seeing it a little bit differently, and with people who have great ideas and great thoughts and great energy, they now have an opportunity to say, be yourself and be the best self you can be. And that's what we really need to hear. At emphasis on being an entrepreneur or having your own businesses, our athletes, after college, they can get together and do some of anything, some of everything. And I think that's a good thing.
That's an interesting point, because I think one of the arguments that I've had with folks, it wasn't really an argument, more like a debate or dialogue about how these young men, the majority of them, end up after their career. And I guess some of it really points back to the fact that they weren't prepared after their career to do anything else. Education-wise, they didn't qualify to go in and get a corporate job. If they didn't have any star value, they weren't going to get any commercial endorsements or things of that nature. So they're left pretty much have to figure out on their own their next career move. And without education, a lot of them really missed out on opportunities to go into, say, the corporate world or whatever, or become that entrepreneur that they want to be. We have good success stories, like the Junior Bridgman story.
Yes.
Not being an all-star top player. Here's a young man who really turned his fortune into an investment, which in turn now positioned him to be one of those people that we can use as a role model. He doesn't get a lot of press because, you know, it's no drama and, I guess, sensationalism about that kind of transition.
Ain't much drama in being in Milwaukee either, but, you know.
Yeah. But we do have enough role models out there who we can speak to these young people about that this is really an option for you. You only got one way to go with this. If you make it big time, then you're set for life.
Well, you touched on something when you said they might not have the training to do other than the sport that they've followed all their life. See, and that goes back to what we're talking about education being. Education is a lot more than just telling them to go to class, take a test, pass a test,
yes,
and stay eligible to play. What should happen at the institutions where we find these young men and young women that we can show them how to be successful people with their talent and their skill so that they can take the hard work that they have to display, and also, Ed, a certain level of intelligence that you must have if you're going to play a sport. I've heard people talk about the playbooks that football players have to learn, and they make them carry them around, and if you lose the playbook, you get fined because you got to know all the audibles that your team, you got to know all the different coverages if you're on defense. You got to know all the different coverages if you're playing offense so you can get open whenever you got the ball. You cannot be a stupid person and comprehend all that.
Absolutely.
You can't take all that in if you're not smart enough to learn. But what happens at some universities, they don't emphasize that. Let me give you a short, quick story about what happened when I was the academic advisor at Wake Forest. One of the first things that the academic advisor prior to me would do, and it's a smart thing, was make sure we lined up all the classes where students had to have labs. And the football players, we tried to make sure none of them had labs on a certain day so that they all could practice late into the evening on that certain day. So we were trying to balance out labs and getting guys to take classes that would give them good grades to balance out some of the harder classes where they might not get good grades. There was a senior who wanted to take an upper-level math course. And he said, Mr. McGregor, I want to take this math. It's like a 300-level math course. I said, why would you take that class? He said, because I know I can get some good quality points. I'll probably get an A in this course. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, I'll probably get an A in this course. I said, well, are you a math major? He said, no, sir. I said, wait, hold it. You're going to take a 300-level math course because you can get A's in it and you're not a math major? He said, no, when I came here as a freshman, they wouldn't let me major in math.
Wow.
That bothered me. That bothered me. It was a black kid, black student athlete, who had a certain amount of brilliance that because he played sport, nobody even took the time to see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a senior, not going to get drafted in the NFL because he's not at a football school. Wake Forest is not a football school, never has been. And he tells me he can get A's in a 300-level math class, and before I got there, they didn't let him major in math. See, that's what I tried to change when I was there as the academic advisor. See, and I see that as being a story that could be, unfortunately, repeated at a lot of places, and not just at major colleges and universities, but also how many smart kids are we overlooking at our HBCUs because they play sport?
Absolutely.
How many times have we not found out where their skills are other than on the field, to encourage them to go as far as they can go in math or science or whatever. That's what I don't like. That's what I know has happened because I saw it happen. I was around it when it did.
Well, you're probably not alone because we hear horror stories all the time about how these young men and women are being processed through college. They're given a scholarship. My own opinion about how this should work. If you're only signing him up for 1 year and you're giving him a full scholarship, how much is that worth? I don't know, in terms of where you're going. You know, it could be $100,000 or whatever. If he walks away after 1 year, what happens to the rest of the scholarship money? Should he be able to compensate the school for the money that they've invested in him and allow some other students who may be in an academic course that needs some of that money? To me, it's turned into a quagmire because the distribution of funds at a college level is just fine.
Ed, when I was in college, it was a four-year scholarship. Now, I understand they're going back to, but when I was academic advisor at Wake in the 80s, it was a one-year renewable scholarship. So they didn't invest 4 years of $100,000. They invested 1 year. And I found that out because there were some students who didn't get recruited by the coach that was coming in who didn't want the guys left over from the coach who used to be there.
Yes. I know how that works because I've seen
it.
You
know how that works. I didn't recruit him. I wouldn't have recruited him, and I don't want to keep him.
Yes, I've seen that happen. As far as scholarships are concerned, now, I found this out last summer, I guess just not paying much attention to the fact that when everyone hollers, we're giving scholarships to this kid, every scholarship and every school had the potential of not being a full ride.
Right. It's
partial scholarships. And a lot of the smaller schools kind of bind with that because they don't have the resources to offer full scholarships to everybody. Yeah. So there may be one or two people on the team get a full scholarship. The rest have partial.
Yeah.
So this is why I'm not an academic person that knows how this works at the college level, but I see some discrepancies here because it seems to me that it's not a balanced equity there when it comes to having these young men come in and you're recruiting them to play, but you can't offer them a full scholarship. They got to find some kind of work equity to go with it or some funding and grants, which the school itself should be working hard to do. But
look, you know what? Ed, there's a whole lot of that. You used the word quagmire earlier on, and it certainly is a bad situation, and that was made worse by good idea.
It's
a bad situation that was made worse by a good idea, and that good idea was Title IX.
Title IX, yeah, okay.
Because Title IX said that the woman's basketball coach had to have the same facilities to make the same amount of money as the men's basketball coach. If the men have 17,000 people at a game and the women have 1,700 people at a game, how are you going to say it should be the same?
Well, that's a valid argument because we know who instituted that, too, you know, back in the day.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And if you have enough money in the programs that say that, if you are the major programs, then maybe you can do that. But if you are certain HBCUs, what you're talking about, and what they started saying is, okay, you got football scholarship, and only men play football. So if you're going to have the same amount of money in scholarships athletically for women as you do for men, how do you justify that? So then you say, well, now let's get us a volleyball team, and then let's get us a field hockey team, and then you got to divide, make sure that there's enough money to go into those programs that's going into the football program. And so you don't have enough money to get a full football team of scholarships because you got to divide those scholarships up because of Title IX equally between men and women. It's a great idea, but it didn't help. And it didn't solve the problem that I think they were trying to get it to solve.
Yeah, I understand. So what would be your advice to a young student athlete? Maybe he has some aspirations to want to play at the next level, maybe pro ambition. His parents, what advice would you give them, say, if he's in the 11th grade?
Well, my advice would be keep your dream alive, but give as much attention to the classroom as you give to your dream. Because effort, hard work, study will get you success in the classroom. But because competition on the court, you're never going to be the fastest. You're not going to be the tallest. You ain't going to be the strongest. You might not get a chance to play. But if your contract is a scholarship to college, then you've done something for yourself and you've done something for your family. Now, once you get to college, go to class, get tutors, raise your hand and ask a question when you don't know. Make your professors know who you are, not what team you're on, so you can get a good college degree. And by doing all those right things in college and playing sport and having a good time and maybe being Joe College, maybe being All-American, maybe being All-Conference, maybe being All-School, and have your fun, but bust your butt to learn as much as you can and go to the college that you want to go to because that college offers you something. Don't go because of a coach, because I promise you, if he gets a better job offer while your butt's there, he's leaving.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
so
right.
You need to go to a school that you like, that's got something that you want. You know what? I'm going to tell you, Ed, if Howard University had recruited me, I don't know if I'd have made it to Wake Forest because Howard University, they got some nice buildings there. But I didn't get recruited by Howard University. In fact, only two black schools talked to me in my whole high school career.
Fayetteville State
and North Carolina A&T. I didn't even hear from any other black schools. Didn't have a choice.
Well, that's one of the topics that we cover on this show. You know, we'll be getting to that.
Some people think that you turn your back on the black community. I didn't even get talked to by but two black college coaches ever.
Yeah, but there was another talk show host, that commentator, that made that same statement. You know, somebody tried to look down on him disparagingly why he didn't attend a HBCU.
Mm-hmm.
He said, they was right there next door to one, and they didn't recruit. He ended up going to the school down the road, which offered him a scholarship, you know, a PWI. So, you know, he still is a major contributor and a supporter of HBCUs. It's in his heart because his parents, you know, some of us have that tradition in our families. But, again, it's where your comfort zone is. And this is why we went through this civil rights revolution back in the day to have the right to make the choices.
Then we get admonished for making them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's not like you can't win. It's like you have to ignore the noise, you know?
You know, my first broadcast job, you know, again, I had a chance to broadcast for 24 years in the NBA, and I had a chance to do an ESPN game thanks to our great friend Ken Free. But my first broadcasting jobs, and I only got like about $25, $35 a game, but I was doing Winston-Salem State University radio. So if you want to look at the whole truth and nothing but the truth, my start in broadcasting is thanks to an HBCU. And God bless Big House Gaines. He knew me. He knew me from playing ball at Wake Forest. And he had enough confidence in me that I would do a good job for the Winston-Salem State Sports Network. And that's where it started for me. So I thank HBCU and I thank the great Clarence Big House Gaines for the opportunity to get started in broadcasting.
Well, that's tremendous. And that's part of the history and the dialogue that we try to preserve. Because a lot of folks who have even benefited from going through those HBCUs have gone on to bigger, better things and don't turn around and endorse them for personal reasons, whatever. That's, again, another whole conversation. But we have to give our dues where dues is due, you know, and that's great that you can acknowledge that this is part of your legacy.
Yes, indeed.
You know, so we just love to have this conversation with folks like yourself because you shared so much insight as to what really makes up us as people, our Constitution, and there's a whole lot more that can be said. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to leave you with just one thought, and this is something that's going to stay with me the rest of my life. One of the greatest personalities, Ed, that I ever met was not an athlete, and it wasn't a male. The greatest personality that I ever had a chance to meet and touch hands with was the great, the late, great Maya Angelou.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maya Angelou said very succinctly, very short, very concise, she said, when you get, give. When you learn, teach.
Yes.
Now, if we all did that, we would play it forward to the point where a lot of things would be better than they are right now.
I agree. I totally agree. And perhaps that's what the driving force behind what we're trying to do here with the Black College Sports and Education Foundation. We have this program called the Comprehensive Preparatory Assistance Program, which really has opened up a whole world of information just to me. You know, I'm involved with helping to create this along with a very affluent director of education, Dr. Charlie Flint, we have aboard here. And every day is a learning experience because we're now being able to touch some of the elements of what is important to these young folks these days. A lot of them are not talking about going to full-time college because for a lot of reasons. You know, but that shouldn't be the end of their hope because there are opportunities out here. And in this global world of work, everything is just speeding along so fast, and we as people are being left behind because we are not engaged as a community, as a church, as a group like ours trying to help to elevate the kids to the point where they can open up their thinking, the options that they have, and having you expound on some things from your perspective, having gone through them, and that's the key. You're not talking about something you heard. This is all personal, and this is what really...
Well, I live this. I live this. The fact, I had a conversation with a coach who was trying to tell me, because I had a real good relationship with the student-athletes there. You know, they could relate to me because I had been a student-athlete where they were student-athletes, and I talked to them about what they needed to do to make it there, to be successful. So the coach told me one day, he says, I see why they like you, because just like them, you're from the ghetto. And I said, whoa, wait, coach, I'm a country boy. I grew up on the farm. I don't know a damn thing about a ghetto. But that's where his head was. And you show me some kids who gone wrong, and I'll show you some adults who led them there.
Absolutely. That's right. Having good mentoring has always been the key to people's
success. See, I get upset when people point the finger, oh, our kids ain't doing this, and oh, our kids ain't doing that, and our kids, yeah, that's the kids who mess up. But there's some grown-ups who they saw mess up before they did.
Yeah, well, yeah. They had role models.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, again, this is why it's so important for us to be able to have an open forum where we can have this dialogue and perhaps reach another one of these young folks who
exactly.
is at that crossroads and needs to know that there are people out here who still can take the time to invest in them and their future.
Exactly.
Gil, we're going to have you come back and continue this because it's just so encouraging, and I just love hearing you talk, really. Because
well, look, when you have me to come back, I'm going to loosen up. And I know I was...
Well, we'll look forward to that, Vic. And we'll have an opportunity to shed a light on how we can help them to shape their future.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate having had a chance to maybe express some of my thoughts that I haven't had a chance to express on a larger scale. And maybe we can get something going and point some people in the right direction who can help these young people go
absolutely,
in the right direction.
Yeah, that's right. We need to learn how to connect again. And it's important that we reach folks if they will listen and just take the time to focus on how we can, in our own little small way, help to change the narrative. So thank
yes,
you again,
sir.
Gil. And,
thank you very much.
And you have a blessed day.
Have a great day.
Okay.
All
take
right.
care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I want to thank you for tuning in again this week. This has been really a dynamic hour that we've had, and I just think that more of these conversations will get us a chance to involve you, the listening audience. We encourage you to contact us. We know you have an opinion. Everybody has one. Everybody talks, but this is a chance for you to sound off in this environment. So we'll look forward to having you come on our show if that's possible. But we do ask for your comments and suggestions, so contact me. I'm at ed.j.hayes@gmail.com or call me at 770-376-6114, and we'll have a conversation. So be sure to visit our website at www.bcsportsfoundation.com. You can connect with us also on Facebook at Black College Sports and Education Foundation, and we're on Twitter and Instagram at HBCU4Life. That's 4Life. And until next week, hopefully you'll enjoy this weekend, and thank you so much for listening. Take care.